This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Andrew and enter promo code Andrew at checkout.
What the Tech?
Hey, everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. You're always pretty good. You're never just great. You're never, like, doing okay. It's just pretty good. It's been an all right day. It's 11:30 in the morning. It's all right. Things have not really picked up, but it hasn't really gotten bad yet. I just wait. My day begins awful, and it gradually gets to pretty good. That's how every one of my days begins.
Right.
This is a show where we talk about technology. We are, I always describe it as two guys sitting at a bar and having a conversation about things that they like in tech. We're not going to tell you the greatest security tips out there. We're not going to, nope. You're not going to get that from this, but you're going to hear two guys rambling about technology. And a lot of late-breaking news today. Obviously, there's some Amazon news we're going to talk about. Yesterday, we got a glimpse at the new Lumia phones. Now, Paul, would you consider yourself a talk man or a city man?
Wow. Jeez.
We're going to find out.
So, I mean, what you mean by that, just in case anyone is curious.
I don't know.
Those are the code names for the two phones. Yeah. One's a phone, one is a phablet.
Yeah. It's like two really crappy radio names, like Paul the Talk Man Theroux and Andrew the City Man Zarian.
Yeah. Right. So, Talkman is the phone. They basically have the same exact specs. It's just screen size that's different. They're both better than HD resolution. They have high-end processors, you know, all that kind of stuff. I think the big thing with these are that they have PureView cameras, which we haven't seen on a new Lumia in a long time, meaning that they're the really kind of nice high-end cameras like we see in the 1520, the 930, the Icon. In fact, they're probably exactly the same cameras. They're 20-megapixel PureView cameras. So, I mean, I'm willing to try both of them. One of the goofy differences between the two is that, make sure I get this right. The Talkman is the button layout is normal, so there's a dedicated camera button. But if you look at the Cityman one, which is the blue one in the photos on my site,
do you have it on there?
Yeah, okay. The button placement on the side is very strange. So instead of a single volume rocker like we've seen on every single Lumia ever, the volume up and volume down are separated, and then in the middle of them there's a power button, and there's never been a Lumia with that layout, and it's unclear why this one has this layout, which I've always thought has been stupid.
The thing that I feel that I, by the way, guys, go to Theroux.com if you want to check it out. Yeah, here it is. I just saw it. Let me just go there. Here we go. Camera 5. All right. So when you look in here, look at the camera's bizarre. Considering they're both 20-megapixel cameras.
Yeah. Why are they different? Well, one of them has a triple flash.
Okay.
And I think that's the bigger of the two. So I guess the blue one. I know why. I don't know. I mean, if you... Let me see if I...
But, like, you know what I mean? Like, the design, overall design is different of it. I understand the flash, but you could keep the flash anywhere. The flash... This flash seems closer to the lens.
If you look at the camera I'm holding up, here we go. This one looks a lot like the Cityman, mm-hmm. right? It's the same kind of little bit of a bump and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
The image you can see on the screen, not my camera, but this, which is an 830, but the one on the screen is the one with the triple flash. And so the flash it's about three times bigger than, you know, what you see here. But why wouldn't they both have the same exact design? Who can tell?
One is the Talkman is going to have a 6-core processor, while the Cityman will have a 8-core processor, an octa-core processor. They're both going to have Windows Hello, which I'm curious to see how well it's going to work on a phone. It's identical. You're absolutely right. They're identical.
Internally.
Yeah. They're both 3,000 milli... No, one is... And actually, obviously, the bigger one has a 3,300 milliamp.
Yeah, I mean, the specs are all...
Yeah.
Except for the flash.
These are beautiful phones.
Yeah. Yeah, some people think so. I mean, I have to say, we've probably talked about this kind of thing generally. It really is sort of distressing to me how frequently people just complain about anything, you know. And so for many months now, people have been complaining about a lack of flagships in the Lumia space. And now that they're starting to be revealed and will be officially announced either in September or October, now people are just complaining about something else. Like, they look cheap in plastic. They, you know, I don't like the design. Why is there a camera bump?
It's exactly what they've been doing for the last how many years?
I know. I mean,
it looks like every other – I see it as yeah. – it looks like every other Lumia that they've ever made.
It's consistent, you know. And I think – you think people would kind of like that, but they don't.
I don't know what people want. I don't think people know what they want. You know, it's almost – when you see something like this, like, the specs look great on this. This is obviously a flagship device. You have a 6-core processor, an 8-core processor in there. I've even heard people complain that why would they even consider an 8-core? Who's going to use 8-cores? Like, yesterday I was just watching the Twitter – the Twitterverse, as they call it, Paul. The Twitterverse.
It is a dark shadow that just destroys your soul on the internet.
Mine has already been destroyed.
No, I make a point of not being on Twitter on the weekends. And when I get on Twitter, I mean, it basically just makes me crazy, like, how awful people are. You know, like, this is just a small thing. I mean, but it's just. You get the same people making the same broken record complaints about the same stuff every single day. Like, I there are like Windows 10 issues that people have. I mentioned something about Windows 10 and it's like, wow, if they would just fix this one issue I've been bitching about since last September. And it's like, dude, seriously. And there's a couple of these guys, you know, like, I'm more than a couple. And you know, these guys are kind of just dog me as if I'm like the problem, you know.
You're the guy. But, you're
you know, it's Paul. Like, I'm sorry that I'm okay with this thing that you don't like. I don't understand why you're stalking me on Twitter, but.
Are you talking about Windows Phone? Like, in general, anything, Windows 10. All this so stuff, I'll give an example. Know. Windows 10. I have it running here on this machine that I have right here in front of me. This is what I use to kind of show you images and things like that. That's my Windows 10 experience is closer to an average computer user's everyday computer use, you know, experience. I'm not doing anything crazy on Windows 10 right now. I'm not going overboard with, you know, trying to run crazy operations. The only crazy thing that I had to do was install these drivers that didn't have proper certificates. But beyond that, I am a casual user of Windows 10 at this point. To me, if I was just walking in here, I go, oh, yeah, look, it's Windows. And I'm going to click on a start menu and go, oh, it's a little different. Okay. I could follow it. I could understand it. I'm not experiencing these problems that a lot of people are. But, you know, I'm using it as a casual user. And
I'm not saying there aren't problems. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I think people go into things with built-in expectations. If it doesn't have this one thing that I need, it's crap. And by the way, since you disagree with me on that, you're an idiot. And it's like, you know, I talked about the sort of success of Windows 10 this week. You know, 75 million people have upgraded or installed it otherwise, or are using it, I should say, which is an amazing figure.
Yeah, which I want to talk about in a little bit.
People will pick this thing apart so many ways. And it's like, guys, seriously, there are 75 million people using this thing in a month. Like, this is an incredible number. There's no way you can contort this to be bad. And it's like, well, I won't use it until they fix this one thing. It's like, great.
But for you, maybe for him, that's the one thing. That's the one thing that they need really badly.
It's nothing important to me. And the thing is, you know, I think we all get stuck into this thing. Like, we, you know, I use technology a certain way. You have to kind of wrap your head around the bigger picture sometimes. It's not possible to meet everyone's wish list because that thing would be a disjointed nightmare of usability problems. But, you know, I was obviously a kind of a level-headed critic of Windows 8, and I look at Windows 10 and I just see something completely different here. And I'm getting a little tired of just the constant complaining. And you see this with these Lumias, you know. You guys have been bitching and moaning for a year about no new flagships, and now they're here. So shut the fuck up and just be happy they're happening. I mean, I don't understand. Look, people think I'm negative, but this is not negative. Ridiculous.
But for the hardware that they announce, is this a, wow, this is awesome? Or is this, okay, this is exactly what it was supposed to be?
It's probably more of the latter. I mean, my point now is just like, God, release something, would you? My God, it's been a year. I mean, you know, if these things are what they release, and then we don't hear from them again for another 2 years, we're going to be in desperate straits. But I think some of the things that could, and I believe I've been told, are happening around these devices are more important. So, for example, one of the issues Microsoft has had in the past is getting carriers to, you know, sell their phones, to update their phones, that kind of stuff. And what I've been told is that these things are going to be shipping with universal radio, so you get LTE wherever it's available. If you put the SIM in, it'll be unlocked, and Microsoft will sell these things directly. And I think that solves a huge problem with the Windows Phone ecosystem.
Oh, tremendous.
At least one of the devices will support that continuum feature, which allows you to either wirelessly or with a wire plug in a keyboard and a mouse and a screen. Microsoft will be selling their own little dongle that will support this and use this thing as a computer and run those universal apps that are available for Windows 10. I think that solves a big problem for Windows Phone, in the sense that it provides them with a real differentiator, something that is not just different, but something that is better and something that the competition isn't doing. And so, you know, we can talk about buttons and, you know, why the bump, blah, 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 whatever. But, I mean, ship it, you know, just ship it.
So, this is a real good question Anthony in our chat room is asking. And I ask this, right? Like, if I'm going into a store, he says, apart from the looks, apart from the aesthetics of the device, why would someone spend the cash and buy a Windows phone instead of buying Android or iOS? Like, what would make me buy it in a store if I'm just walking in?
Yeah, I don't. I think I told you this. I'm just going to tell you a sort of an anecdotal story that kind of explains it. Those people that we house swap with in France, did not have smartphones.
That's amazing.
And so, because I get review units from Microsoft and everything, at the last minute, I was like, well, let me configure a phone for these guys. The data will work while they're here in the United States. They can make phone calls on it. So if they're on the road and need to call a hotel or something, or need to reach us, you know, maybe the car breaks down or something. And I set up a Windows phone for them. It was a Lumia 640 XL. Did I tell you this story already?
No.
Okay. I left it here with instructions for them. The only things on the front screen, like on the start screen, were tiles for reaching Stephanie and I and calling the house with the house number and the address. Maps pre-built with directions to and from the airport and the house.
That is really thoughtful, actually.
Downloaded all the maps so they would be available offline for all of New England and for Quebec, because I knew they were going to Montreal. That kind of stuff. And so there were 5 or 7 tiles on there or whatever. And, you know, I honestly had no expectations that they would or would not use this, but I tried to stress to them that, look, this thing is free. You should just use it as much as you want. It will always work. You can reach us with it. You can, you know, maps, obviously, that kind of stuff. So we didn't really hear much about it over the course of the home exchange. And then after we got home, you know, we reached out to each other. We talked a little bit about how things had gone, and they were really happy about everything, and we were really happy about everything. And one of the things that they said was, using this phone on this trip really opened their eyes to smartphones, and they're going to go down and they're going to buy a Windows phone now. And by the way, that Lumia 640 XL is one of the phones that you can buy at Orange in France. I think the problem for Windows Phone is that that's what needs to happen. People need to use it to understand the user experience on Windows Phone. Just looking at the start screen and the live stuff that's occurring with the tiles is a million times better than anything that's available on Android or iOS, which is just in and out, in and out, in and out of apps. Yes, there are apps that are missing on Windows Phone, but Lumias tend to have superior cameras. I find a lot of the Lumia specific apps that they make, that Microsoft now makes, to be excellent. There are unique capabilities, you know, offline maps, which still hasn't come to Google Maps yet on any platform, although it's, of course, coming event, you know, years later, they finally show up and get it done. I just think it's really the user experience kind of thing. These things are rock solid. You can drop these things on the cement. You can drop them on cobblestones. They don't break. The screen doesn't shatter. There's no problem. They're solid devices. They're well made. And I think the big thing for this is, you know, there's the continuum stuff coming in Windows 10 Mobile, but I think really the integration Microsoft services is all the stuff that the Microsoft will kind of use to sell it. But for me, it's the user experience. And I think moving forward, it's also going to be kind of a signature / Nexus / whatever. Maybe those are the only two examples. Pricing kind of a deal, right? Where today what you see are a lot of low-end Lumias that are, you know, inexpensive to buy. Yeah. You can buy that Lumia 640 XL off contract or unlocked for $200 ish. I think, you know, it's a tremendous value. If they're smart, and this is something I just don't have any information about, these flagships can't cost $650.
That was going to be my question to you. Yeah.
I don't know. But they can't. They can't cost that much.
And they should. I mean, first of all, no flagship should. And we talk about this all the time, right? Like, we talk about the pricing of these devices. OnePlus, they're selling their devices $299, $399. You know, you could buy a phone $499. I mean, I don't think they have a $499. I think it's $399 now. But these are flagship devices, right? And they're able to sell it at that cost, so contract-free.
Something I wrote this article that probably no one read recently, but I was thinking about the upcoming Nexus devices from Google, right? And apparently this year they're going to have a phone and a phablet. And I feel like one of the things they really messed up last year, well, actually they messed up a bunch. Before last year, the Nexus devices, and I'm talking about phones and tablets, made sense. You know, there were two generations of a Nexus 7, kind of a nice right size type device for a tablet. And then there was a Nexus 4 and a Nexus 5, which were phones. And they were great phones for the day, especially the Nexus 5. Last year, they got rid of the Nexus 7, came up with a Nexus 9, which is the wrong size device.
Yeah.
And the thing was just as expensive as an iPad. And then they came out with a Nexus 6, which is a huge, like, 6-inch phablet.
It's very expensive.
They got rid of it. They don't have a phone anymore. And that thing's super expensive. So you have to buy it off contract. It was several hundred dollars. I don't remember the exact price. But, you know, by the end of the Nexus 5's lifetime, you could buy that thing for $299, no contract, LTE. It was a wonderful device. It's still today a wonderful device. And I think and I hope that Google with Nexus will get it right this year, that they'll return to that kind of value proposition. I don't have any information about a smaller tablet, but they really need one. And smaller phones, certainly. And I hope and expect that Microsoft does the same thing with these Windows phones, because otherwise, like you say, what would be the point? Like, how would you sell it?
Yeah, other than obviously their hardcore user base, you know, that group of people.
Yeah, okay,
that
so once we get past those 17 people who have been bitching and moaning, and now we'll bitch and moan anyway because that's what these people do, you have to reach a wider audience than that. I do think that as disastrous as the past year has been in many ways for Windows Phone, that the strategy of going after the value part of the market makes sense in general. The problem is that the way they attacked it specifically with really shitty devices like the Lumia 530 was wrong. It can't be cheap. It has to be inexpensive but be a good value. And, you know, back in the day, a couple of years ago, the Lumia 520 hit that sweet spot. The Lumia 635, I think, hit that sweet spot. The Lumia 730, 735, and 830, I think, hit that sweet spot, more mid-market with those devices. They need to do that with the high-end devices too. So I don't have any information about that. I literally don't know. But I hope that happens. And I think that's the value proposition. Get a flagship for half the price of a flagship.
Yeah. If they did that, I wonder if the argument for them is, if we did this, how much would it change our market share? You know, if they had a flagship at half the cost of a flagship phone, would people go, you know what? I probably would go out and buy one immediately. If I could go and buy a Windows phone, flagship Windows phone, $299, $399, just go in and buy it.
I bought a Lumia 930 in January, and I want to say I spent $400 on it, right? So this was a device that at the time was still today, and I'm still using it today, a high-end device. But, you know, it's like last year's device.
Yeah.
Right now, I bet if you looked at it, maybe it was closer to $300. It's $300 to $400 when I bought it, but I'm sure if you looked at Expansys or Amazon right now, a Lumia 930 unlocked, which, you know, is HSPA, not LTE here in the United States, that's the price they need to hit. You know, that's what these devices need to be. They need to be universal radios. They need to be unlocked. They need to work anywhere. They need to be affordable. And, you know, that's the piece of the puzzle I don't know. Are they going to be affordable? Because if they're not, they've just wasted their time.
Yeah, interesting.
No matter how good.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting concept of how they market this thing and who they're marketing it to. Obviously, you know, we know that the cameras are good, so if you're looking for a good camera, this is who you want to go with.
Yeah. Although, you know, that advantage is dwindling. I mean, the iPad 6 and 6 Plus, the new Samsung devices from 6 on, you know, S6 on up, And even some of the previous gen devices have amazing cameras.
My S6, I have an S6 right here. It has an unbelievable camera.
Yeah,
Camera. Obviously, you know, I finesse it a little bit. I know how to take pictures. And Samsung kind of understands that photography has kind of become a big part of the selling point. So what they actually did in their last update, they added a little exposure tab here. So you could, I don't know if you could see it right there. But you could actually bring the exposure up and down, which has been one of the hardest things to do on these Android phones is drop the exposure.
I was going to say, we've had that in Lumia for
years. You guys have had it. we're too dumb to have it. But, you know, Samsung added this thing, and it's been a nice little addition to their, you know, I guess, version of Android. I'm actually a fan of this, and I didn't think I would be a fan of the Samsung version of Android, but it's pretty clean cut, and it's exactly what you're getting, and I bought it for the camera. Now, would I move to a Windows phone? Yeah, I probably would. Would I move from an iPhone to a Windows phone? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And that's the thing. Like, I think we're at a point now where people have had phones. They've had subsequent phones. They either switch back and forth or they stuck, with whatever platform they were on. And it's a hard thing to ask in this day and age for people to make this kind of a switch. Is there something on these phones that would entice an iPhone user?
It has happened organically, right? You want to talk about the Apple revolution and what happened with Apple. And, you know, they slowly, technically the iPod is what started this whole thing.
Yeah. But an MP3 remember player. Too, Apple's solution to everything is for you to buy something else, right? So, if you really like the iPod, but you want a phone, you got to buy a phone. You know, it's not something, you know, I mean, obviously that becomes the iPad, the iPhone. So you like iPod, sorry. If you want to have, you use a Mac, you're like, well, I would like to be able to touch the screen and everything. It's like, oh, you got to buy an iPad for that.
Yeah. But that's how they converted everybody over. I had an iPod. I never had an Apple product prior to that.
They're beautiful products. But I mean, I think whether you want this as an individual or more likely a business would want this for their employees.
Yeah.
Ability to carry one device and come into work, dock the thing, and have your full PC environment. You work all day long, and then you go on your work trip, you go home, and you take the phone with you, and now it's a phone. And likewise, you could do the same thing at home. It's actually really powerful. It becomes more powerful when the ability to use this thing as a PC is in more places. It's kind of like electric charging things for cars. It's kind of a neat concept, but if you can't find one, it's useless. I think for a lot of businesses, and they know how to manage these devices, they understand Windows very well. That's really enticing and potentially could save a lot of money, not just in hardware costs, but in, you know, training costs.
Yeah. Interesting. I want to continue this discussion because it's interesting, and maybe we could talk about ecosystems and how they're going to affect enterprise in a way, because you do have a point there. This may be the best thing for a company to provide considering it's one system, right? It's all Windows. It's all the same, Paul.
It's almost like it's one Windows.
It's one Windows. One Windi. One Windi. I want to take a moment and talk about our sponsor, and that's Casper. I've been talking about them for months. I have a Casper mattress. Paul has a Casper mattress. A lot of you have a Casper mattress now because you've heard us talk about it. I had a major, major back problem for years. And this is not even my copy. I just want to talk about this. For years, I just suffered from just awful sciatica. I had a herniated disc in my back, and I went to the store. I have four discs, actually, that are bad. I went to the store, and I went to one of these, you know, big box, you know, mattress company stores, and I went there, and I did the whole thing where they sit you down. I laid on this thing, and they show me the pressure points, and they tell me, you know, here's where your problem is, and this is the type of mattress you need. Like, it was like a total evaluation they did. I ended up spending about $2,500 or more on this on a mattress. I bought a major brand, you know, plush pillow top, this crazy Bentley of mattresses. I bought the thing. I hated it from day one. But I couldn't return the thing because you need like a day or two to adjust. You need a couple days. You need maybe a week to adjust. By the time I realized I hated this thing, it was like 20 days in. And guess what? You couldn't bring it back. Casper does 100 days. You could sleep on this thing for 100 days. They'll pick it up. If you don't like it, no problem. Just send it right back to them. They give you your money back. It's not a problem at all. They offer free delivery. It's painless returning. So it was a major problem. For years, I suffered with this thing until I got even after my back problems got a little better, I still slept on it. It was still miserable. I hated the mattress. It was way too soft. Casper contacted me, and they said they want to take an ad. And they go, do you want the mattress? I go, absolutely. If I'm going to talk about it, let me get it. I sleep on this thing every day like a baby. The best mattress I've slept on. And that's no lie. I could talk about all the technology. I could talk about the latex and memory foam, but that really doesn't really mean much to most people. The true selling point is someone that's happy with this thing. I've spoken about this a bunch of times, and I know so many people that have purchased this, and I have yet to hear one complaint from somebody that has bought a Casper mattress. If you go to casper.com/Andrew and use our promo code, Andrew, you get $50 off a mattress. Any mattress you purchase from the website, any size, any mattress you purchase from them. Really good people. They're here in New York. I got mine within, I guess, a couple days, day or two. Comes UPS in a box. You just undo this thing and it just expands because it's, latex and memory foam. So it's unbelievable. Casper.com/Andrew. Enter promo code Andrew at checkout and get $50 off any mattress. I want to thank Casper for supporting, and I want to thank Casper for sending me this mattress because I've been sleeping on it since, I want to say, January, and very good. It's very, very good. All right, Paul, let's talk about Windows.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard. A lot of people are using Windows 10.
Yeah, I've heard that.
75 million users. I'm willing to bet that these are free upgrades, majority of these. 90-something percent are probably all free upgrades, right?
I mean, that's my guess.
I would guess that.
Yeah. I don't think people are rushing out to stores to buy Windows 10,
Yeah.
They can get it for free.
Most successful launch?
That's my opinion. It's early days still. But I think what you need to do is look at the percentage of the user base, compare it to previous releases of Windows. And then just the general success rate. The thing is, I've gotten a lot of these, apples to oranges comparison complaints. Like, in the past, Microsoft would talk about license sales because the way that they sell Windows is they sell Windows licenses, essentially. They sell them to PC makers. They sell them to the enterprise. And then those things eventually make their way out to actual users. But there's no way to know how many people were actually using Windows. And so, after 2 months, Windows 7, they sold 60 million licenses. Well, how many people were actually using Windows 7? It probably was 40 to 50 million, probably. I mean, maybe. I don't know. But some tens of millions of those licenses were sitting unused on PCs and in stores or in, on pallets somewhere or at PC makers' manufacturing facilities where they hadn't even been applied to devices yet because, they buy them in bulk.
Yeah.
One of the other things we learned, with Windows 8 was that Microsoft offered a really impressive number for Windows 8, where they had said after 1 month they had sold 40 million licenses, and that sounded really impressive. But what Microsoft knew, actually, and they weren't talking about, and I knew because I had some of their internal documentation, was that this thing had completely dropped off the face of the earth. They had sold a bunch of these licenses to PC makers so they could put them in computers. The way that their enterprise licensing works is that as the new version comes out, you switch over to licensing the new version, but they have downgrade rights, and so they were all installing Windows 7 or even Windows XP on that day.
Amazing.
And no one was buying Windows 8, and so what happened very quickly was that PC makers stopped ordering it, and then they really kind of stopped talking about license sales. They only released a couple of other numbers. I think the following May they said 100 million, but
they had to work that
it
number.
It was a disaster. Yeah, they had to really contort things. How many of those licenses were converted to previous versions of Windows? Most of them.
I would say a lot. Yeah. Even in like the Best Buy, circular every week, you would see the same machine that was marketed as Windows 8 laptops. You saw it come Windows 7 later down the road. So.
Yep. So I think the big success story here is that there's a number of things that I think make this a big success story. One of them is that these represent actual users. These are people that actually accepted the upgrade allowed it to happen, and then are successfully running Windows 10 today. I'm not saying that there aren't problems. I'm not saying that some people haven't been successful. But 75 million, that's 75 million people up and running. 75 million PCs or devices up and running. That's amazing. The upgrade process was always the hardest thing to do in the past. It was the least common way for people to acquire a new version of Windows. That's not what people ever did.
I mean, we've always spoken about that. People don't download. Most people don't go and upgrade Windows. They wait till their computer goes and they go buy a new computer with the latest version of Windows on it.
Yes, I had this guy was a developer evangelist or an MVP type guy working in the Microsoft space complaining about this kind of apples to oranges thing, and it's like from a developer standpoint, this is the biggest win in the history of wins because those are people using the system. When you tout license numbers in the past, you don't know what that means. But as a developer, this is actually much better news for you. This tells you there is, in fact, a ready audience, soon to be 100 million people, actually running this system. I mean, I don't understand how anyone could complain about it.
That's a huge adoption.
You can pick this apart however you want, but one of the things I wrote about in an article about, why is this so successful was, people forget because we all have such short memories and we're all also trying to contort the truth to match our worldview. But, Windows 7, widely accepted to be one of the most successful versions of Windows ever. People forget. They had to give away free copies of that to get it to sell.
They did.
They had a Windows Home, a Windows Family Pack for Home Premium where you got three copies of the OS for the price of one. It was so successful, they did it twice. They did it the following holiday season as well. With Windows 8, they had a $40 upgrade, trying to entice people to upgrade to the thing as cheaply as possible. And when that didn't work, they gave away Windows 8.1 for free, not just to users, but to PC makers so that they could make the cheapest possible devices, kind of get this upgrade thing rolling. And guess what? Didn't work. So Windows has been free before. Windows has been low cost before. There have been special deals before. I get that this is a special case. It's a very wide group of people that can upgrade for free. Thank God it's working. And more important, not just working as a promotion, but the upgrades are working because they're seeing tremendous success in the reliability of the upgrade, despite the diversity of hardware.
I mean, do we know what percentage of the market this is? I saw something from StatCounter that said global stats for Windows 10 was it was like 6 or 7%.
Yeah, so you could do the math on it, and we'll use Microsoft's numbers. We know that Microsoft says there are 1.5 billion people actively using Windows today.
Okay.
So 75 million goes into 1.5 billion. How many times? probably 6 or 7%.
Yeah, 6 or 7%.
Yeah.
Which, that's a good sign. It's growing.
Month one.
They still have not passed Windows XP.
Well, by the way, within 2 weeks or 3 weeks from now, the conversation we're going to be having is they just went past Mac OS X. All versions of Mac OS X combined, all Mac users combined, more people using Windows 10. And by the way, Apple makes so much money on the Mac. Yeah, this isn't about making money on the Mac. It's about the success of the platform, getting this thing in the hands of users, and showing developers that there is a market there for their apps. It is way more important than just a one-quarter big bang of license upgrade money or whatever. This is a much bigger play than that. And rather than downplay that this success because it's free, to me, I think that contributes to why this is such a big deal. It's such a big change. The goal, remember, is to have 1 billion people on this platform within, 2 years or something. I can assure you their internal goal is really to beat that by some huge amount, meaning they'll hit 1 billion way before that, and that at that time, whatever the time frame was, that they'll have, double that number or something, or whatever is possible. Their goal is to succeed. They wouldn't state that if it wasn't attainable. They want to, go past that.
What I'm curious to see is that Windows 7 number, percent market share, and how that's going to drop as Windows 10 rises. Because these are all Windows 7 machines.
Well, so the only thing I would say to that is, in some ways it doesn't matter. Windows 7 is still supported for about 5 more years. You can't technically buy a Windows 7 PC anymore, finally. And no one is going to buy a Windows 8 PC right now. That would be ridiculous. I think that this is going to fill in the rest of the market, and that what we're going to see is Windows 7 and Windows 10, right? It will be the primary and basically only Windows platforms. And then they can start chipping away at Windows 7 as we get a little bit closer to you know, Windows 7's end of life. And so if you look at what the usage looks like today, I think Windows 7 is somewhere 60, 70% of all.
About there. It's a Windows little under installs. 60%. It's about 50% at this point.
Oh, okay.
According to what I'm looking at, I mean, obviously this could be a little wrong, but.
Okay. So 30 to 40 to 50% of 1.5 billion is the available market. If not a single person upgrades from Windows 7, that's how many people they could reach without selling new computers.
Yeah.
You know, up to 750 million installs.
Yeah, Windows 7, Windows 7, 53%, 50%.
Okay.
It's still, I mean, it's still a small number when you talk about the entire market, but the question is that they are, people are installing this.
People will say, you know, well, of course it's selling well. I mean, Windows 8 was such a frickin' disaster. There were a lot of people waiting, to which I would say Windows Vista was a frickin' disaster, and a lot of people were waiting there, and there are more people using there are over 2.5 times as many people using Windows 10 right now as we're using Windows 7 at the same moment in its life cycle. So I don't understand how you can turn this into anything other than what it is.
I mean, it's a positive. Success. I mean, obviously, it's a huge positive. It's a huge success. It's a great operating system. It's what Windows should be. It's a smart enough operating system where it knows what kind of device you're on. They fixed a lot of these bizarro problems that, you know, someone like me had with Windows 8. I don't even feel like Windows 8 existed at this point. It's like a distant memory of me being unhappy. No, I mean, this did
like
everything.
A bad nightmare.
You know what? It's familiar enough that the new things are great. And that's what people want. People don't want new. They want, okay, well, I know this,
familiar,
but look at this. It's shiny. Yeah. Like
familiar, but new as well. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people, obviously, start menu's back, right? Great. All right. That will fix a lot of problems for people.
The hysteria.
The modern app issue where apps were, everything was full screen. It was like, what the heck? You know, 27-inch screen, that doesn't make any sense. All right. Those things run in Windows now. Neat. Those are obvious. You know, there's some additional, they added Task View and virtual desktops, Cortana, you know, all that kind of stuff. Neat. I think there are little things in Windows 10 that people don't appreciate. There's stuff that came over from Windows 8 that no one even knew existed, which benefits desktop users. So all that stuff is just there. That's fantastic. But there are little things like, you know, it's not just that these modern apps are running in Windows anymore. They've completely kind of reworked the platform. It's like a big V2 version of that platform. So they're not just, you know, taking app UIs and shrinking them down. All of the built-in apps that Microsoft has made, the universal apps, have UIs that will auto-tailor for the orientations, size, and pixel density of the screen, meaning that they'll run wonderfully on phones, they'll run great on tablets, and they'll run great on big screen, you know, PCs. They'll work with a keyboard and mouse, and not just work with some giant, you know, Play School Fisher-Price buttons like you used to see in the Metro apps, but using user interface controls that actually make sense for the device you're using. And so it's not actually that subtle, but I think people maybe think it's subtle. There's a major change in the app platform that just makes it the whole thing better for everyone, no matter how you choose to use the device, no matter which type of device you use, no matter what the hardware is. And I think that stuff is profound.
I think for most people, they're going to find that they're going to be happy with this. Obviously, I'm curious. Are you hearing from people that are on 8.1? They're like, no way, Jose. I like this the way it is.
Yeah, and the only group that I've heard from that says that are people who have Windows 8 on a 8.1 on a tablet.
No, and like I'm talking about desktop people.
No. Yeah. No one would ever say that. No one would ever.
Find that person.
I don't mean to say like those people, if they exist, are idiots, but it's a ludicrous assertion to make. I mean, because there's no way that a full screen start screen makes any sense at all. There's no way that full screen apps make any sense. I was never going to use Xbox Music on Windows 8.1 or 8 because it ran full screen, and that's worthless to me. I'm working here,
yeah.
You know. And we had utilities that fixed that at the time. And Groove Music is even better because now the UI actually makes sense for keyboard and mouse as well.
It's I'm looking here at Windows. Like, I'm just clicking around while you're talking.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this makes so much more sense. You know, like, I'm looking at, like, the Money app, you know. So I clicked on the Money app, and it's like the floating window, you know. And it's like there. And I get it. And then I could X out, but I'm still in desktop. I could still do something else.
Right. You can shrink it down. One of the neat things you can do with these apps, you can do this right on your desktop, is shrink them down to, like, the size and shape of a phone screen and watch how they just kind of adapt.
Yeah.
You know,
it's responsive.
Even on a PC.
Yeah, it's responsive. So I just did that. So here, let me see if I can do this. There we go. So totally, it's totally adaptive. So the bigger I go.
Yep.
Look at that. Who would have thought?
This works. What an idea.
Yeah, what an idea. Yeah. Look at that. It is like a phone screen. Interesting. Paul, I want to take a moment and talk about something you wrote about today. And Facebook made an announcement about Facebook M.
Yeah.
You want to talk about this? It's interesting what they're doing here.
I've kind of gone kicking and screaming into the point of this. And ultimately, what I've decided is that this has no chance. but what they've done is what you see the big hardware platform makers do, which is create a digital personal assistant, in this case for their messaging platform, Facebook Messenger. The theory being that if you're a captive audience, you might want to get other things done while you're there. You can interact with this M personal digital assistant as you would a contact. You send them text messages and it responds and it does things for you. I think there's an inherent superiority to a system that is tied to the device. And so Cortana on Windows devices, Siri on Apple's devices, or Google Now on Android, where A, you can summon it with your voice, you know. B, they have or will soon have kind of predictive qualities to them. For example, you see this on Android, you see it on Windows Phone, you'll soon see it on iPhone, where you're out in the world doing something and you get a reminder and it says, hey, you have a flight at 7 p.m., but there's a lot of traffic, so you should leave soon.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just putting up a dumb reminder because you said 3 months ago when you booked the flight that I want to be reminded 2 hours ahead of time. Like, it proactively does something intelligent based on the information that it has. So M, which is the Facebook version of this, sounds a lot like these other solutions. It doesn't have this proactive capability, which I think is to its detriment. It does have, and I haven't used it, so I can't really say how well it works, but apparently it has the ability to kind of complete the deal. So for example, in Cortana or Siri, you could say, hey, remind me when I get off the train to buy flowers for my wife, that kind of thing. So using location services later today, when I get off the train, it will say, hey, bing, you know, don't forget, you want to buy flowers for your wife. The M thing will actually, apparently, I have not used it, but apparently will follow through on this. It will buy the flowers, you know, through its whatever else is on your phone or whatever is inside the service or whatever will complete the deal. In other words, it will say, do you want me to buy your wife flowers? Now it's that time. And you say yes, and it sends them to your wife, that kind of thing.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
So who is it deciding that?
Yeah.
Did you hear that? I'm screaming outside. How does it decide where to go?
To buy the flowers?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. So I know that in Cortana, which is the one of these that I have the most experience using, that you have a notebook where you set up, you know, defaults and settings and so forth. And Cortana doesn't have this capability, but it's not hard to imagine in the Cortana notebook saying, when I say buy flowers, I want to buy them from this place. And it would be like 1-800-flowers.com. The account's already set up on the phone. You don't have to do anything like type in your password or anything. And it uses, it's sort of artificial intelligence or whatever to do that kind of stuff. I think the problem for M, though, is that that final step thing, A, it's going to be very limited in the beginning, right? It's only going to work with some services. It's only going to work for some people. It's only going to work for some types of things. For example, in the Cortana integration that is in Windows 10 for Edge, which is the new web browser, it has the ability to kind of look at web pages and say, is information on here about a restaurant? And I can provide like a pane that's, if you're familiar with the Windows stuff, it kind of goes back to Local Scout where it has the phone number, which you can, of course, click on and call. It has the address we can click on and do a map. It has ratings from users and from services, and you can learn more. You can see the menu, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. In the initial release of Edge, that only works for restaurants. They don't have that information for movie theaters, for other types of establishments you might want to visit. Obviously, they're going to add that stuff over time. I think, obviously, Cortana, Siri, Google Now add this next step, you know, capability to their services, of course. I mean, it's so obvious. But I think the one thing that Facebook is never going to be able to handle unless they make their own device, which they've tried, by the way, and failed at, is you can pick up one of these devices or in a Windows computer and just be there in front of it and just talk, and you can start interacting with the assistant. You're never going to be able to do that with Facebook because the platforms will not allow that.
Yeah.
So you have to – this is really the whack-a-mole problem again, right? And this is the problem I've always had with iPhone or Android-type UIs. You have to pick up the phone and you have to think, okay, I want to do this thing. To do this thing, I need this app. And this app is located in this position on this home screen, and now I have to go there to initiate this action.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of movement.
It's a lot of work for the user. You know, I think the reason that these digital assistant UIs are going to take the place of the whack-a-mole kind of grid of icons is that they allow you to pick up your phone and interact with it naturally. I think voice is a lot more natural than text messaging, but of course I'm not a 16-year-old, and it kind of abstracts the apps and their functionality from you, which, by the way, was the goal of Tiles and Windows Phone and now in Windows 10, but is also the goal of what Google is doing with Google Now, right? They're starting to add app integration to this. You know, as an app developer, obviously you kind of want to be there, but you also realize in integrating my app with Google Now, that means people aren't going to be seeing my app anymore, even though they'll be using its services, and that there's some detriment to the brand when you do that.
I would assume a lot of times people are going to use this as a personal concierge to just make reservations for restaurants.
Yeah, that will be, by the way, and making restaurant reservations is one of the few explicit use cases right now. Buying flowers is one of them. Restaurant reservations is one.
I mean, I saw one right now. Like, I'm on the post you did on the Petrie website, and it, you know, it says, you know, I'm looking for shoes, baby shoes, and then it says, what about these shoes? And it posts a picture of shoes.
Yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, I hope those are right. I mean, it's weird. This stuff develops, people already have conversations with Siri, which is actually one of the dumber digital assistants, as if it were a person. So, in other words, you probably see this in ads, but certainly people in real life have done this. Siri, what's the weather? And then Siri says, this is what the weather is. And then the person says, thank you, Siri, as if you're still in, like, it's not listening anymore. It wouldn't understand that response. But we tend to anthropomorphize, or whatever the word is, or dehumanize these things as if they were real things. But as they get more sophisticated, the dividing line between kind of fake and real is going to blur, and you start having conversations. You see that in Cortana, where you can say, Cortana, remind me to buy flowers to my wife when I get off the train. And she'll say something, okay, today, when you get off the train, you want me to remind you to buy flowers. Is this correct? And if you say yes, it's done. But if you say no, she'll say, okay, which part of it would you like to change? And you actually have a
conversation. Conversation. Rather than repeating the entire thing.
It's a limited conversation. It's kind of a Zork level conversation, if that makes sense to you, where you can only say certain things and have it mean and make any sense to the game in that case. And you'd be typing, of course, in Zork. But these things will get more sophisticated, right? And all the platform makers will tout whatever artificial intelligence capabilities they have. Microsoft's, of course, will be machine learning that's in the Azure cloud, and other companies will do whatever they do. But I think for them,
it seems like their hope is that people are going to use Facebook Messenger, which is interesting how I use different chat, you know, messaging services with different people. Like, I've never once messaged you on Facebook.
Right. And thank God. But actually, I really hate Facebook Messenger.
But there are people that I exclusively only have conversations with on Facebook Messenger.
Interesting.
I message them. I could Skype them. But this is where they've messaged me and I've messaged them. It's gotten a lot more scattered compared to previous years. You know, before, you had one ecosystem you committed to. If it was AIM, it was MSN, it was Google Talk, whatever it was, iMessage. Now it seems like
So
everybody's messaging on every different platform.
Most messaging platforms from the big players, so Apple's and Microsoft's, and actually not Microsoft's, but soon Microsoft's, and Google's, will allow you to integrate SMS and MMS messaging with their IP-based solution, right? That makes sense. Microsoft's original vision for Windows Phone made even more sense, which was we're going to have a shell of an application called Messenger. It will support MMS and SMS by default, of course, that will work. We will integrate with our own thing, which at the time was Windows Live Messenger, but became Skype. And the idea being that you can now, drop off of Skype and go back to MMS if you want to go in the opposite direction, turn it into a video call. Makes sense. But it was also kind of open in the sense that other companies could integrate their things into it as well. I should say theoretically, because it never happened. Whoever they are, the iMessages, the Google Hangouts, the whatevers, the WhatsApp, the whoever, whatever those things are, could all be in the same place. But of course, those companies don't want their brand to be downplayed. They, it's not enough that you use it. You have to use it at the expense of everything else. And so, right, a lot of people on their phone will have multiple messaging apps, multiple ways that they can reach people. And even I have like Facebook Messenger, because I have to, and I hate that it's a separate app, but that's how Facebook does things. But I mean, most of my messaging is kind of, I think you asked me a couple weeks ago, what messaging app to use? And I was like, I use text message. I think I said Facebook Messenger, but the truth is I use text messaging. I mean, that's.
Yeah. Like I'm using iMessage because it's really convenient to chat with people on iMessage.
Yeah.
Via iMessage, and most people that I know have an iPhone.
That integration. So if you're on a Mac, you can do it on the Mac, and it will on the back end, it goes out to someone on a cell phone. You don't have to think about it. It just kind of works. And I think that's smart. The problem is it's limited to Apple's ecosystem and to Apple's messaging solution.
Well, actually, I use it with Google. So let's say, like my friend Dara here, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I go to our conversation, I could click on her name, and it'll say iMessage, which will be a phone number or the email. Or yep. I could switch to Google Talk.
Oh, inside of iMessage.
Inside of iMessage.
Oh,
so,
that's cool. Okay.
But I don't think you could do that on the phone. You could only do it on the desktop version. But I'm able to go back and forth. Yeah, but it's in the same thread.
Right. That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this cross solution stuff is very dicey. It certainly on Windows Phone, there's no good solution for this. I did look up, by the way, what are the most popular messaging apps in the world? And I think number one was WhatsApp. And it was something like 800 million users or 730 or 750, whatever.
I've never used them.
Facebook was number two. Skype was in there. Kick was in there. All the ones you would expect. I mean, the ones that are popular in Japan or China or whatever were in there. They're all WeChat and whatever. But they're all kind of islands right now. And I think the reason people use things is because other people use them as well, right? Why are we all on Facebook? Because everyone we know is on Facebook.
I mean, do you remember like apps like Trillion, mm-hmm. like
yeah.
used to want to use, but it never worked right. It never really.
Well, it, it, did
it was a
it
little
did.
Funky. You couldn't get everything to work right. Like you couldn't. Yeah. It was all bizarre how it would work. But
would try to integrate with as many services as they could, and some were a little more open than others, and some would change their APIs, and it wouldn't work. And that's what it was.
With a trillion three.
That's what it still is. It still is, right? It's the same thing today. It really is the same thing. I think that this gives Facebook a differentiator over like WhatsApp and WeChat, and because they don't have this stuff, and they may not have the capability, either the computer science or financial capability to develop this kind of solution. And maybe it gives them a leg up. I don't know.
I have a great question right now, and I would really want an answer for it. ICQ still exists, and ICQ. They're on every platform. You get on iOS, Android, PC, Windows Phone, Mac, Windows 10. Who's using ICQ?
I know.
And why?
Like Israeli hackers?
Yeah, like is
when
that
when I first came out, I was working on some of the first book or some of the first books I ever wrote. So this would have been 94, 95 at the latest. And I remember my co-author, the guy had got me into writing, saw it on his computer and thought it was a virus.
ICQ.
And we investigated it. And his wife had installed it because, again, this is what people do. Like people use something, you use it. And ICQ has been, let's see if it says, this says it was launched in 1996. So it was 1996, I guess. But the thing is, it's 18 years old.
And people, who are these people that are using it?
Marabolous I remember it was Israeli.
I wonder if it has like a little popular, you know, AOL owns them now.
Yeah. Well, actually not anymore. It's mail.ru, which is going to be like a Russian thing.
Oh, so they sold them off. I remember AOL bought them for a while. They do video chat.
Well, AOL had AIM, obviously. Yahoo, what was their thing? Just Yahoo Messenger? That was the biggest thing in the world for a while. You know, this stuff has really evolved.
I want to download this. Paul, you want to ICQ? Yeah. Hey, can you give me your
really
ICQ number?
Honest, I really, really don't.
Do you remember that whole gimmick with the numbers? 559-662-899-233-335, and that was like your username?
No, but that's funny.
But you know what they had, which was interesting? In their chat service, you could actually see what people were typing to you.
Oh, as they typed.
As they typed it. Like, that was like a setting you could have, and I thought that was really interesting. And AOL AIM adopted that in one of their betas. And I can't believe
this thing's still around.
I can't either. I'm actually shocked that it's still around. I was going to a website as a joke, but it still exists. On AIM, I was part of the like beta program for AOL. So for one of the betas, they were playing around with this idea of incorporating the fact that you could see what other people are typing. But if you were on the beta and someone wasn't, you could still see them doing that feature. Wasn't like a setting; it was just there. So if you type with someone, you could actually see what they were typing and then backpedaling on.
That's great.
And it existed for like.
It's like you're such a douche. Anyway, I am not sure I agree with you.
Yeah, fully. Yeah. Like that's exactly what it was, and I thought it was unbelievable that this existed.
Yeah.
Oh man, I don't know how we got to ICQ, but yeah, you're right. I mean, there's so many different ecosystems and so many different ways to communicate at this point. Where I think everybody's just using a little of everything. Snapchat. Someone sent me a Snapchat the other day, and I was actually talking to them on Snapchat.
I think people are going to go where the users are, and clearly there are a lot of users of Facebook Messenger. It's number two, but it's sort of like Windows. You know, at the height of its popularity, you sort of understood, even though it was going great, things might maybe waning. You know, that this is the beginning of the end, because you know my youngest child, who's not all that young anymore, does not use and will never use Facebook. Couldn't care less about
Facebook. That's amazing. But Instagram, and, on the other hand,
yeah. And we are, what do you call it, Snapchat or whatever. I mean, they just use different tools. You know, they're into different stuff.
It's unbelievable how it changes. All right, Paul, time to wrap it up. If you're watching live, guys, we're going to do our bonus show right now, right after this. If you're listening to the podcast, you could always access the bonus show. It's exclusive on Patreon.com. It's patreon.com/whatthetech. You can fund us anything. Dimes, nickel, quarters. With your funding, we were able to go with an ad-free stream that we're testing out today. We signed up with Livestream, and now we're offering you guys an ad-free live video feed. Because I know those ads get a little annoying every couple of minutes when you see a pop-up ad, and it takes over the entire thing. So we want to make the experience of watching as seamless as possible. So patreon.com/whatthetech. Go to Paul's website, therot.com. Hey, there's a meetup happening in 2 weeks, huh?
Yeah, I hope anyone can get into it. it's gonna be kind of a big deal. But yeah, in, 2 weeks. 2 weeks from yesterday, I think, right? Wednesday?
2 weeks from yesterday, yeah. Not next week, but the following week.
We'll be at Rattle and Hum between 3 and 5 p.m.
I'll be there.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to be there.
You could watch me get drunk, and then you could ask me questions, and then watch me get angrier and angrier by the end of the night.
Right.
And at one point, I just leave. You know what happens to me? The anxiety of the bill comes. Like, if there's a lot of people at the table.
Yeah, how's this going
to
work?
Like, how is it? I'm trying to figure, like an hour into it, I'm trying to work what's going to happen. And I know someone's not going to have enough. And someone's going to have a credit card, and all I feel bad is for the waitress that has to split the bill 10 ways.
Well, I don't worry about the bill splitting. I mean, that's, you know, that's what they do.
I don't get it with you. Like, I don't get that anxiety with you.
Those guys, the people who work there are fantastic. They know what's going on. They'll come down and slap down a separate bill for everybody. They don't care.
Yeah, they don't care. And
they know
slap
exactly
you too.
What everyone got. I mean, they're really good.
Yeah. The waitress almost knocked me out the other day when I ordered a Pinot Grigio. Just almost punched me right in the face.
She got my message then.
Yeah. Go to our website, gfknetwork.com.
If that little poof comes in there and orders a Pinot Gris,
yeah,
you have my permission.
Which I will be. I'll, you know what? I'm going to be drinking rosé this time.
Right.
I'm going to be walking around with a little, I want like a little, like a really long stem, champagne glass. I want like a, just like a little bit of rosé in there. Just walking around saying hello to everybody.
You can like swirl it as you talk.
I would like to, whenever someone comes to introduce themselves to me, I just want to go enchanté and give them my hand.
So here's what would be even better, would be a giant goblet that was made of glass so that you could see it was full of rosé or some sparkling wine or whatever it was, and you were drinking it out of a crazy straw.
I'll do that. I'll just sip it from a straw.
With like making loud slurping.
I'm going to be as ridiculous possible, guys, at this event. So come by, rattle and hum. I think if you go to twit.tv, they have all the information there for everything. I don't know if you or MJ posted this yet.
What's that?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm not sure I'm going to mention it in print or whatever.
Okay.
I'm a little nervous about the crowd.
Next week we are on Thursday once again because Paul's in New York for something. So we're not going to do a show on Tuesday. We're going to do it on Thursday. And the following week, we're also on Thursday. Guys, subscribe to the podcast. We're everywhere podcasts are available. Helps us out a lot when you do. If you're watching live, stay tuned. What the Talk is up next. If not, we'll see y'all next week.